let's talk about the origins, right? Backward goes our gaze, back into the past, back into around before Agincourt, sort of the year 1300, around that time, right? So there was a great threat from the continent of invasion, and the king needed men. England was a more sparse place than it was on the continent. The king, there was a necessity for him to institute that every able-bodied Englishman, every person trained on a Saturday in the longbow, right? But also he would train his son, right? So that's two things, the skills itself, but also learning how to teach them and pass them down. And that's a big deal, right? That's like an emergent psychotechnology thing. And don't underestimate the importance of this idea. The first time you've got a group of people studying, practicing, a national practice almost, once a week, and then jumping forward ahead to the Battle of Agincourt, right? So you've got these French knights, these nobles on horseback, in glistening armor and cannon, and you've got far superior numbers on their side. And then England's the ragtag group. Yes, they've got their armored people, but footmen, right? Mostly people on foot, but the yeomen, right, with their longbows. This is the big deal, is that these skills that they learn, they decimate the field. Like, they are responsible for winning that thing and killing nobles, yeomen, for the first time. This idea of chivalry is killed for the first time. And because of them, they win the battle. So you get this whole, all these people go back to England. And don't underestimate the power of this idea. Is that this meta skill that you've learned, it's shown you, and you've killed people with it, like the power of it enacted in the field. That idea for the first time, across the whole place too, this national practice, this practice that you've undertaken allows you to affect your will upon the world. This weekly practice and this thing that launches this projectile gives you a power to enact your will. And you've seen on the field it kill people. Enact your will and win battles. That the king himself, right, his chief responsibility is the defense of the realm, right? The defense of the realm. And he's asked the population for the first time again, I need your help in my chief duty. I want you to train in arms once a week, right? To help me with my defense of the realm, which is it's his responsibility. There's no standing army. They need the people from amongst the people. That's like huge, huge, right? So, it's okay. So it's part, just as an idea, just think about this as an idea, as an emergent thing. It's like, part of the king's duty, it's my duty as well, right? Just thinking about this for the first time. So anyway, back to Agincourt. So they decimate them on the field first, and they're part of the king's duty. There's essentially a warrior king at that time. They come home with this idea, this psychotechnology of the training they've done, and they know how to pass it on father to son. It's been connected with affecting the world, this longbow, right, this bearing of the arms. Now we're jumping forward a bit in time here to around the time of the Peasant Rebellion, general tyranny that is rising in the place. And the ruling class brings in this rent tax, and there's a general uprising amongst the peasants, all the people that were trained in this bow that have this training of the psychotechnology, right? So they, long story short, they move in on London and they essentially kill the merchant class, the bureaucrats, that sort of thing. The peasants kill all those people. They take over the whole city. Apart from the Tower of London, where the king's sort of held up with his main sort of units and his guards and the lords, and they're protected. But they kill a lot of people already, right? And so you have for the first time this whole, almost the whole place, all the people that have this skill, this psychotechnology, rise up. They go to London. They have the demand of this rent tax being removed, right? Their own moral impulsion. Again, they're enacting their will upon the place, right? And they go looking, they want it written down on paper. So they go in, they're going to the scribes and where the scribes are doing their thing to get this to happen. And eventually the king sort of comes out here saying, if you disassemble, I will see to your demands. And what they ask for, they say, we want it to say that we are free. we are free from prosecution for you coming after us, right? So he agrees to that too. And what happens is he gives them what they ask for. You could consider it a charter, right? It's on a piece of paper. It says this. He even says that people could send letters in, and if they wanted one, they could get, they were sent out, and that was done for the first 2 weeks. They sent out the letters saying they couldn't be prosecuted to all the local boroughs, right? If you wrote in. And the great seal of the king, of the sovereign, is on this charter, right? That has the statement that the rent tax will be removed and these people will not be prosecuted. They're free. They are to be free from prosecution, right? So what that tells you, that he's informed by their moral impulsion for the first time, the king, who usually has the impulsion and says, no, this is what's right, goes top down. This time it came bottom up, saying, no, the patterns of action that you're operating under, your behaviors, your moral are wrong. This is what we do in England. This, and you breach this. This is a breach of the peace. This is a breach of the continuity. This is a breach of the continuity of England. And we're informing you this time. This, think about this. This is the first time it happened, right? On a national scale, this power, this arms, these arms they have, this new, the first time they've enacted their will, and then they're going in there and they've made the ruling class agree. They've made the ruling class agree to their demands. And it's written on a piece of paper that says they were right, right? Think about it. If you think about it, think about it clearly for a second, is that they bear arms. You read this piece of paper, has the great seal. Every person sees this too, right? The regular people are getting this charter that has a piece of paper that has this sort of great seal on it. And it's basically, you're reading it and you think, I was right to bear arms against the ruling class in London. It says right here. And they've ceded to the demands I made. We were right. And if we rephrase that for a second, the right to bear arms, right? And don't mistake this, right? I think about Mount Everest, right? Before it happens for the first time, it's like impossible. It's this thing. But once it's happened, that's entirely different. It's like the perspectival knowledge, the procedural knowledge that is linked up with the act of actually climbing the mountain and firstly showing that it is possible. And then everyone else is able to do it. Before that, though, that weight over it, that it is impossible, perspectival knowledge you get from actually having someone gone there, that happened across the whole bloody place, right? For the first time, it says, I was right to bear arms and using my skill and this psychotechnology that I have, right, that was shown to work in Agincourt, worked here internally as well. For the first time, our will, or my will, the sense of the commons, right? Our will was brought to bear against the ruling, governing class, and they ceded to our demands, right? And then you get the charter, and you're reading it, you think, I was right to bear arms. And then we all had these arms, we all trained in these arms, and we know forever on that, and so does the ruling class, right? And they realized that what they had done too is that when they'd given the, oh shit, what have we created here? We've trained every man in England as an able-bodied person. It's too late though. It was too late. And they realized that in the Peasant Rebellion, it was too late. It's like, oh shit, we needed the help. Oh, this is such a great idea. But what we did is we armed people against us, right? That we couldn't tyrannize them. And forever on in the ruling class, the same thing is known. Again, anyway, and then you ought to think about too is that when you see these big events happen, that's value in terms of it's a huge event that tells every individual the value of the skills you have. Just like decimating the French was a valuation too, right? And then that story, that narrative order is passed down, and then the value of that thing emerges as an impulsion after that. Because it's an impulsion that drove them there. And that's connected to what happened in Agincourt as well, because they took the king's duty into their own hand. So if you're like, oh, we've got duty, so we have ownership over this thing as well, don't we? We took the king's duty and we have ownership over this thing. So perhaps we should have a say in especially in a tyrannical tax that's brought over us, or a tyrannical situation. And then they go and do it. And then their will in an internal situation is granted. And even if it's taken away later, which it was, right? Because the ruling cronies got in and the king then, because the king agreed to it without their permission. And then there's this sort of ruling elite inside. then told the king, oh, we have to go back on that. So after 2 weeks, they brought the letters back, and they went and hunted people. But it doesn't matter. The point is, they did do it, and for the first time that happened, you can't take that back. A, you can't take the power that the people recognize in themselves, the valuation, the value that's assigned. And then you see the pathway. It's like a complex is built. That's why I call it an implicit psychotechnology. A complex is built. Ideas don't come from nowhere, and you won't see anywhere else. Like a whole nation of a group of people learning this skill. You just have to recognize how important these things are, especially when they happen for the first time and when they're connected to a practice. Like just summing it up, a practice of teaching, a practice of learning, it's demonstrated power in Agincourt in enacting your will upon violent will upon the enemy, linked to you being asked to defend the realm as an individual together, all of you, right? That connected to later on internally, you getting an unfair tyrannical situation from the ruling class, and then you rise up with those ideas that were birthed in Agincourt and your longbow of you defended the realm, right? Then I guess perhaps you should have a say in how these things, especially if this tyrannical situation arises. And then you have the king himself says that you were right to do it, essentially, in the short, that you won't be chased for this and we're getting rid of this. On a piece of paper with the Great Seal, all these people saw it, right? The Great Seals aren't given to regular people. They can't read half the time, right? They have to have scribes do it. And if you sent a letter in, they would send one out to you. If you had a letter written that said, send this out to me that says I can't be arrested, bang, you were sent it for the first 2 weeks anyway. The Great Seal is the symbol of sovereignty. So you understand the sovereignty by looking at it. Like a symbol is like that. Is that helps you look outside your own framing. You see the world through it. So you're looking at that. It's got you on it, and it's got the Great Seal on it. You're connected to it. So not only is it internally, not only you've seen it by your actions. It's not just procedural understanding or knowledge. It's connected to like visual symbols too, the visual sacred symbols of the realm. Firstly, the king himself and the crown saying that, oh, you were right to do this, essentially. I mean, I'm saying that's implicit in what's occurred, that I was right, we were right to do this. They changed their behavior. Every able-bodied man knows how to enact a certain amount of power because they have before to defend the realm. So they have this spirit within them, which I would call the king spirit, right? So it's almost, you can see this emergent process of an internalization of the king spirit, is that you've played a part in your defense of the realm. You want a part of being a sovereign, right? A constituent piece of the sovereignty of the realm as well. And you see that enacted, the value to it. Like, if I'm dangerous, then I can play my part in the sovereignty of the realm. I've done it before. I've done the king's duty before. I was asked, it's his duty to defend the realm. But the general whole populace, having done it, is a big deal. Everyone's seen this. Everyone's shared the story. Everyone, there's an emergent moral narrative. It's being passed amongst people as they're telling stories to each other. It's passed from father to son. So there's a pathway there for the narrative order and a moral order to emerge. Oh, yes. So I think I've drawn the connection there. You can see the power of that thing and the power of that practice, especially being everyone that did it. And you didn't have that anywhere in Europe, man. That's all connected to the arms bearing, this skill that's passed down. And this narrative emerges about it. And then after that is when the Robin Hood legends emerge. So I'll read this other bit from Francis Turner Palgrave. It deals with Agincourt, with England and one against France, outfacing the oriflamme red, the red dragons of Merlin advance. As harvest in autumn renewed, the lances bend over the fields, snow thick are arrow heads white, level the foe as they light. Knighthood to yeoman yields, proud heart the king watches as higher goes the blaze of the battle and nigher. Today is a day will be written in story to the great world's end and forever. Let the boy alone have the glory. Harold at Senlac-on-Sea by Norman arrow laid low. When the shield wall was breached by the shaft, thou art avenged by the bow. By the bows on the field in Agincourt is what it's saying. chivalry name of romance, thou art henceforth but a name, weapon that none can withstand, you in the Englishman's hand, flight shaft unerring in aim. As a lightning struck forest, the foeman, as a lightning struck forest, the foeman, shiver down to the stroke of the bowman. Oh, today is a day will be written in story to the great world's end and forever. So let the boy have the glory. Pride of Liguria's shore, Genoa wrestles in vain. Vainly Bohemia's king, king-like, is lain with the slain. The blood lake is wiped out in blood. The shame of the centuries over. Where the pride of the Norman had sway, the lions lord over the fray. The legions of France are no more. The prince to his father kneels lowly. His is the battle, his holy. For today is a day will be written in story to the great world's end and forever. So let him have the spurs and the glory. I find that really interesting. Is that it describes too that, yeah, let him have the glory, right? Because so powerful is this sort of psychotechnology. Is that, yeah, let the boy king have the glory. Like, because this story is so powerful that it needs to be spread. It's going to be spread everywhere that we did it, that we made chivalry lay low. King Harold, the Saxon king, when William defeated him on the field, is connecting it to that nicely too, is that this, that arrow that killed him, here's the arrow destroying the French, but also it's the people, it's like the English people themselves that are like lifted up by this. There's a recognition in it. Two, knighthood to yeomanry yields. And I love the spirit of that, because it's like nobility is about your virtue. It's about your noble spirit and how you, the nobility that you build in yourself, right? And it's like chivalry on its own is sort of like your behavior when your reputation's at stake, not your prime values that are catalyzed and cultivated by your culture. And that's this event represents that, this knighthood to yeomanry yields. So chivalry, this idea of chivalry yields to a more nobler spirit. I like that. King like is lame with the slain, when it, like the power of this king spirit that's emerging, I would say, lays this idea of ultimate. It's like we all play our part in our defense of the realm, and as is shown in Agincourt, and it lays this tyrannical, imperial, Roman emperor authority where it's 100% top-down and so easily becomes arbitrary situation, that power over you. They don't rely on your consent, basically, is what I'm trying to say. And now we've showed it, we are a different way. Or we each have a piece of the duty. We each have a constituent piece of the duty. And our consent is required if we're dangerous. You in the Englishman's hand. Because it's you, the thing that grows in England, that any man can make himself, and also the Englishman himself. You in the Englishman's hand, not the you on its own, but the you formulated and cultivated into something through practice. Both the land and the Englishman is formed into something. Into a weapon, exaptable weapon, exaptable in terms of can be adapted for other uses, an exaptable weapon of mind, of spirit, of arms together. You have a complex, like a meme complex, a complex that builds up between these different practices and skills and what they do in the world and their valuation for how they become valued in the culture and the narrative order that emerges out of those things. And the perspectival understanding that comes from going overseas and using those practices to enact your will on the world, everyone doing it, and then everyone playing their part in defense of the realm. The king's duty is made your duty, and then you come back and things are the same way, and then you are asked to pay unfair tyrannical taxes, and then no, hang on, I have this power in my hand, don't I? I have this power and this practice. It's been passed to me. From my father. I know it's valued. I know it kills French nobles on the field. I know that the cannons they had did, we weren't scared of that. All we needed was the stick of yew and a string and these bows that any Englishman can make across the realm, right? And went there, and then we'll do the same thing here. Let's rise up. And then, of course, the rule connected to the ruling class. And then you get the charter itself, and that says, we're right to do that. And then here's a pathway. It's a complex is building, like a complex of understanding, even implicit, that that's the right thing to do. And even in the ruling class, they're seeing the same thing, is that we're reformed by them, they're reformed by us. And you can see there it becoming like a natural right. Of course you guys would say that. Of course when they're drafting, they'd say their right to bear arms, right? Because it feels so natural that that would be right. You had this complex in place, this sort of psychotechnological complex connected to this skill set, this practice of bearing arms, this practice of bearing arms to defend the realm externally, and then that is done internally later. So all that's connected. So you can see that it's all connected together. A narrative order emerges from that. But it's not just a story. It's connected to the real procedural implicit skills that were this understanding you get for enacting your will in the world, right? So if you have an arm and bear it, there's something you learn from doing that. You don't learn from the proposition that says, here's what happens when you shoot a gun, or even what I'm saying now is just a description, a proposition. The actual skill of doing it is connected to the moral impulses, and the spirit emerges. Let's call it a pattern of behavior, might be a more objective way of putting it, emerges. It's connected to this complex, this complex of skills and practices emerges as the king spirit, the king in every man, right? Every person defended the realm. Every person came up and said, we want our constituent piece of sovereignty as well, and you reform it. And that's connected to the weapon and the longbow that made it possible, the yew that just grew in the greenwood that made it possible, the string that was made in England, the arrows that were made in England, forward in time to the same people across the sea, thinking, how can we make sure, what's natural to us to stop tyranny from emerging, and is to bear an arm. It is to have the right to bear an arm, not just have the right to actually bear it, right? Because it's just a piece of paper. But this instinct for having the power to enact your will against a tyrant, to resist a tyrant, is a moral impulsion that we share in common across all the English-speaking world. It's one we should be proud of and we should embrace, not just the right to, but actually the use of arms and being dangerous citizens and